In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Wednesday, June 2nd, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. On today's program, in hour number two, a discussion of the National Security Strategy. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton talking about it at the Brookings Institution last week. And we'll have highlights of that presentation and more information about the National Security Strategy throughout the hour on In-Depth today. We start, though, with leadership. You can learn to be a leader. Dr. Jerry Gingrich is a professor at the Information Resources Management College at the National Defense University and an adjunct professor of public policy at Georgetown, and teaches a course at NDU called Leadership for the Information Age. And she is my guest today to talk about leadership and learning to be a leader and why it may be valuable for not only you to become a better leader, but for the people you manage to be better leaders. Jerry, it's great to have you back on the program. You were on with us in January to talk about a piece that you did in conjunction with our friend Alan Baloudis for a public manager. It's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, Francis.
The concept that somebody can learn to be a leader is kind of the opposite of what some people believe, which is that either you're born a leader or you're not a leader. Are we talking about people learning to become leaders in full form, or are we talking about them learning the decision-making capabilities that we believe everybody seems to agree that great leaders have?
All right. Well, there's long been a controversy on whether great leaders are born or developed. It's sort of that old nature or nurture question comes up with regards to lots of qualities, creativity, something else we might touch on today. Mm-hmm. But leadership has been viewed from both prisms, i.e. that people are born with certain talents and therefore achieve greatness. And then there's a very strong argument for the environmental or the nurture point of view, which is that people with maybe even average talents and skills can actually learn to be leaders. And just to complicate the issue a little bit more, there's also a strong emphasis lots of times on timing, mm-hmm. and fate, if you will, uh-huh. or luck. As my dad used to say, you know, success frequently favors the prepared mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A classic example would be Winston Churchill.
Uh-huh.
So you've got somebody that for years runs for an office, but only when the timing is correct, only when circumstances present itself, does that person rise to the fore.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham Lincoln would be another classic case.
Yeah.
Lost election after election, but is considered one of our most famous presidents. So it's nature, nurture, and then also being in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
My experience in the field, which is about 25 years now, is that you can take a person with relatively average talents and qualities and teach them many skills and abilities about being a leader,
mm-hmm.
And that they can arise to the occasion. There are, of course, people that no matter how much you teach them or train them or mentor them, they simply don't step into the role of a leader.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more complicated, actually, than just the simple nature or nurture question.
Okay. When your students come to you, do you think they have a good idea of the difference between talents, which are the things that they have born into them, and skills, which are abilities that they can acquire? Do they even understand that concept at the level they're coming to you?
No, typically not. I have two groups of students, as you mentioned, one at the National Defense University. They're typically 40 and 45 years old. My younger students at Georgetown are more like 30.
Mm-hmm.
They've been in the workforce a little while, but not near as long as my students at the National Defense University. But in both cases, I'd say overwhelmingly, they come to courses in leadership, my courses, asking very much the same question you just asked,
mm-hmm.
which is, I really want to take this course, but can you really help me?
Yeah, can I even do this?
Can I do this?
Yeah.
So the same thing comes up.
They're probably very happy then when you tell them that, yes, there is hope for you.
There is hope for you.
You're not a
That's
hopeless
correct.
Case.
That's correct. And I need you to be in my courses also.
Yeah. Now, the title of this course that we're focusing on today is Leadership for the Information Age. How is leadership different now than it was maybe 15, 15, 20, 25 years ago when we were in a more analog era.
Oh, good. Analog versus digital.
Uh-huh.
Yes, everything that I focus on has to do with, of course, today's world and the information age, mm-hmm. and how technology and information changes that. At one time, I was sort of a hardcore technologist, putting together my own little motherboards and those sorts of things. But I graduated past that stage and went on to trying to think about, well, how does technology change the strategy of an organization?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's a very close step from asking, well, how does it change leadership in an organization? And that's where my interest and my research and teaching have focused for the last 15 years or so. But definitely leadership today is looked upon very differently than say, 20 years ago in what we would call the industrial age.
Mm-hmm.
Today's information age, as everyone knows, is globalized. We're information rich. We're, in many cases, information overloaded. Boundaries between nation states as well as organizations are very porous. Information flows even across those boundaries, which we used to think of as fairly closed.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, both organizations and nation states are affected much more by the dynamic environment in the year 2010 than they were, say, in the year 1990.
Mm-hmm.
Or especially if you go back as much as 1980 or 1985. But consequently, leading an organization today means leading an organization knowing that it has to change with the environment and knowing that it's going to be affected by the dynamic environment. And consequently, it's a much more challenging job.
Yeah.
In the industrial age, 20, 30 years ago, we were mostly interested in having good managers because we were doing routine business, or as I like to say, we were turning out widgets,
mm-hmm.
you know, more widgets, doing the same thing over and over. So we wanted very good managers, but we weren't interested in having a lot of leaders because we just wanted to keep things status quo.
Yep.
In the information age, we're not interested in the status quo. We know that that's not good enough anymore.
Well, not even possible in a lot of cases.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It doesn't matter whether you're a large organization like DOD or whether you're Apple Computers.
Mm-hmm.
You have to constantly be inventing, innovating, doing things that are new and different, adapting, being agile. And consequently, the demands on a leader are of a very different nature. We want people that can lead their organizations through that change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very challenging task. We want leaders that can motivate their people to follow them through those periods of change,
mm-hmm.
and possibly chaos and crisis. Certain leadership skills from 20, 30 years ago are relevant, but the ones that have come to the fore, the ones that we now recognize are imperative. You cannot do without them. Are these abilities to lead change, set vision so that people know where they're going, motivate the people so that they're comfortable changing from position A to position B?
Mm-hmm. The concept of leadership having shifted in that way obviously then requires a different skill set for a successful leader today,
mm-hmm.
than 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go about helping people to understand? You mentioned at NDU, your average student is in his or her 40s.
Mm-hmm.
They grew up and came into the workforce,
mm-hmm.
in that industrial age,
mm-hmm.
or came into government during that industrial age,
yes.
when the mentality was, my ultimate career goal is to be the best manager in my organization, and that's out the window,
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
So do you find yourself kind of starting at the very beginning and retraining what somebody's idea of leadership is before you even start to instill the elements of leadership in them?
Yes. There's an old model in psychology of cognitive change, which,
mm-hmm.
basically says you have to unfreeze,
yeah.
a model, unfreeze a mental model is the term we use today, and then introduce the person to the change,
mm-hmm.
and then, quote, refreeze, i.e. get it so that it's in place and they understand it and can use it. Absolutely. A lot of the students come in, they've got their old mental model, they've got the old idea of leadership, and only over time in the course does that model unfreeze, and then they're more willing to accept new ideas, and then they're willing to accept them to the extent that they'll take them back to their workplace and actually
and
use them.
Do something with them.
Which would be the freezing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Let's explore that when we come back from the break. My guest is Dr. Jerry Gingrich of the National Defense University on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in a moment.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
U.S. military tanker aircraft have suspended refueling operations at Manas Air Base in Kyrgyzstan. A new contract is being renegotiated with the interim government in that country. Pentagon spokesman Brian Whitman says refueling for KC-135 aerial refueling tankers had been shifted to a new location, which is not being disclosed for security reasons. Whitman said the move has not disrupted operations in Afghanistan, and the movement of troops and supplies through Manas have not been affected either. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine buying a television or vehicle today that you'll still be using in 40 years? Probably not. When the military purchase an airplane, they know it has to last at least that long or longer, and the parts for the airplane may already be obsolete. That's where Airink comes in. Airink helps the DoD plan ahead for parts obsolescence. This planning saves money and lessens the risk of counterfeit parts being used if the original supplier no longer exists. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Attention, CIOs. There's a cyberspace battle going on.
The threat is everywhere.
And you may be losing.
You should be afraid. Very afraid.
The only way to solve your cybersecurity threat is our way.
Everybody's selling cybersecurity these days. It's all about fear and drama. At HP, we believe cybersecurity isn't about fear. It's about managing threats while still achieving your mission objectives. For us, cybersecurity means actively managing risks and costs, and enhancing the freedom of action of your organization. Every day, HP helps our government and commercial clients securely achieve their missions with speed, precision, and confidence.
In cyberspace, no one can hear you scream.
Take the fear out of cyber threats and enable your organization to thrive in an uncertain environment. Visit HP at hp.com/go/cybersecurity. Outcomes that matter. Copyright 2010 Hewlett-Packard Development Company, LP.
Save money at HalfPriceDC.com with half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more. This week, HalfPriceDC.com has half-price gift certificates to Manny and Olga's, irresistible pizza, subs, gyros, and more with locations in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Place an order at a location near you today. And Old Dominion Speedway, Washington, D.C.'s only metropolitan place for racing action with drag racing on Fridays and NASCAR racing on Saturdays. See all the offers at HalfPriceDC.com.
Federal agencies must submit annual sustainability plans starting this month. These plans must outline how the agency will meet Executive Order 13514 to conserve more, consume less, and reduce its carbon footprint. Tune in to the GovGreen panel Tuesday, June 8th at 11:30 a.m. to hear experts from the EPA and National Capital Planning Commission discuss the implementation, monitoring, and challenges of sustainability plans and how it affects all federal employees. Don't miss the GovGreen panel June 8th, 11:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Wednesday edition of the Dorabeck Insider. You probably saw the ominous headlines over the weekend, the Dow's worst May since 1940. Well, what did it mean for your TSP? And the Social Security Administration faced the challenge of reaching out to people across the sparsely populated western state. We're going to introduce you to the team that came up with a creative solution and scored a place as a Sammy's finalist. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Dr. Jerry Gingrich, professor at the Information Resources Management College at the National Defense University. And we're talking about leadership and how people can learn to become leaders. In one of the classes that Dr. Gingrich teaches at NDU is called Leadership for the Information Age. And we were talking before the break, Jerry, about how you get people in your class, and you have to kind of, you use the term unfreeze, which I think is pretty apt, and kind of unlearn them about being what their notion of being a leader is. How do you start that process, and what kind of information are you getting out of their heads to then put in the 2010 model of leadership?
I haven't ever thought about this one in depth because I just sort of do it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Many of my courses I teach in a five-day format, an executive format, and that means very intense.
Yeah.
So actually, it might lend itself well to this freezing, unfreezing model. In advance of the time that I see them on a Monday morning, I send out to them electronically many readings and stress that those readings need to be completed before they show up on Monday morning to encourage high levels of participation right from the start. So they come in that sense. They've been indoctrinated, if you will, a little bit with some readings, all right? And on the first day of the course, which is, you know, a full 8 hours, that's when I get the most, I guess you'd say, the most challenge from the students, all right? So this gets sort of really back to teaching, I think, which is that no matter how much they challenge me, I keep holding my position. So do the other faculty. We have them see four different faculty in the first day, which is unusual. And their goal in the very first day, in the first part of our course, is to talk about thinking differently. And that a leader in today's world needs to think differently than a leader from, say, 20 years ago. And they grapple with these concepts, and it's not easy for most of them to accept. So I think a lot of it is simply, i.e., the unfreezing process and getting them to change a mental model has to do with the faculty, the quality of the faculty, and the fact that we remain as open-minded as we can, but we are resolute in introducing these new ideas. Usually by Tuesday or Wednesday, which would be the second or the third day of the course, you begin to see the students use the concepts in their conversation. Like I said, Monday is mostly a, we don't agree with this, and we don't quite know what we think of this.
But we have to be here,
but
so
we have to be
we'll do
here,
it anyway.
And I signed up for this course, right? So here I am.
But
by Tuesday and Wednesday, usually, you'll hear them use the language, and then you know that, that they've opened their mind enough to actually talk the language. And usually by maybe late Wednesday or Thursday, you can see them put it into practice through experiential exercises or classroom simulations, various group exercises, things like that. You know, give them an assignment, put them off for an hour, and ask them to achieve some goal. And when they come back, if they're using those concepts, then you know you finally got it into practice, if you will.
Yeah, I'm reminded of language studies where people tell you that if you when you start to think in the your second language, that's when you've really got it nailed. And that was kind of going to be my next question, which you've sort of answered already in a way, which is, how do you tell when this is really sunk in and when the person has really got this concept and is going to be equipped to take it back to his or her organization and implement it?
Yes, I like that analogy. By the end of the course, of course, you see it much more. So we reinforce it that way with major presentations, and then we reinforce it again by asking them to write a paper post those 5 days, a paper that's due some time later. But in other words, there's reinforcement in several ways once they start using these concepts.
We're just a minute or so away from another break, but I want to talk about one element. You'd laid out some of the course content here for me, and one of the things that you emphasize is creativity. Give us a little preview, and we'll get into a deeper discussion after the break, but about the emphasis on creativity when it comes to leadership and why that's important now and it wasn't necessarily 20 years ago.
All right. Well, briefly, creativity is one of those key skills, ways of thinking that we emphasize that you need to practice or enable yourself, but also enable your subordinates. And we were not looking for creativity anywhere in the government or in the private sector 20 years ago.
All right. Well, let's dig into that a little bit more when we come back from the break. My guest is Dr. Jerry Gingrich, professor at the National Defense University. My guest for the hour on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
Bye. I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are higher on some positive economic data. The Dow's up 112 points, the Nasdaq higher by 34. The National Association of Realtors says its pending home sales index rose 6% in April from the previous month. That's as potential buyers rush to meet a deadline to qualify for a federal tax credit. That's the highest level since October of last year. Chrysler reporting its U.S. sales rose 33% in May. That marks the first month the automaker has sold more than 100,000 vehicles in more than 2 years. Meantime, Ford says its sales rose by 22% last month from a year earlier, and General Motors reporting a 38% increase. Unemployment rates fell in April in 90% of the country's largest metropolitan areas. The Labor Department says the jobless rate fell in 345 areas, rose in 12, and remained flat in 14. Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio.
There are many debt relief plans and scams out there. So if you find yourself with $10,000 or more in credit card debt and you just want the facts about legitimate debt relief solutions available to you, then call American Credit Card Solutions for a free informational kit that will tell you about your options in simple, easy-to-understand terminology. The kit is free, the shipping is free, and there is absolutely no sales pitch, just the facts. Sent directly to you in the mail. This free informational kit can be mailed to you today so you can examine all the debt relief options available in the comfort of your home with no one pressuring you to make a quick decision. Call 800-912-9955 and ask for your free kit. That's 800-912-9955. This is a first-come, first-serve offer, and kits are limited. So call right now for your free debt informational kit. 800-912-9955. That's 800-912-9955.
Wondering if you've chosen the wrong push-to-talk provider for your mission? Well, it's never too late to switch to Verizon. With the push-to-talk-capable BlackBerry Tor and America's largest push-to-talk coverage area, Verizon delivers the instant mobile voice connectivity and real-time data access your mission deserves, all on a device your people can depend on. To learn how you can put your mission on the map, call 1-800-561-6227 or visit verizonwireless.com/gov.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down the walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
This week on Agency of the Month, brought to you by ITT Defense.
Keeping the airport runway safe is not easy, but the FAA uses technology to help. Director of Runway Safety, Wes Timmons.
When we see a serious runway incursion, we will put it through an extraordinary level of scrutiny. We do the root cause analysis. We use a software program. What it does is give us a strategy and a methodology to work through down to the root cause of an event.
I'm Ruben Gomez.
Who did the FAA select to develop its next generation air traffic management system to manage 87,000 flights every day? ITT. ITT Defense has a single focus: deliver innovative technology solutions to governments worldwide. From next-generation imaging that integrates space, airborne, ground, and soldier sensors to energy systems that disrupt the enemy, ITT has the technology and experience to address the most pressing mission challenges. ITT Defense, doing essential things in extraordinary ways. Visit them at defense.itt.com.
Watching your own eyes. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Yes, your ability to see objects that are close by clearly can get worse just because you're growing older. It's called presbyopia, and it's usually correctable with glasses. But this doesn't mean every vision problem that older people have is because of aging, even though seniors might think so. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Janan Sadin says people need to check.
Many major eye diseases don't have early warning signs, and that's why a comprehensive eye exam is important, because that's the only way you can detect serious eye diseases.
Sadin says people can help their eye health by not smoking, wearing protective eyewear and protecting their eyes from the sun, and eating healthy and staying active. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for June is the International Association of Firefighters Burn Foundation. Summer's at hand, and with it the danger of burns from cookouts and campfires. The IAFF Burn Foundation is dedicated to preventing burns and helping burn survivors. Visit station partners at federalnewsradio.com for 10 helpful tips on preventing burns and more information about the Burn Foundation. And while you're there, you can join the cause and help burn survivors. Community Spotlight is brought to you by Ackerman Security Systems. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are talking about leadership and how you and the members of your team can learn leadership rather than just it being something born into you or not born into you. My guest is Dr. Jerry Gingrich, who teaches a class about leadership for the Information Age at the National Defense University. And the concept of team is one that I want to get into later on in the hour, because that's something that I think leaders both in government and at companies that do business with government struggle with sometimes.
Yes.
At this time period, in this day and age. But we were talking about creativity before the break. And the idea of how, since, as you were saying when we first started, the idea that leaders are thinking in many different ways today than they did 15, 20 years ago. They're not thinking about turning out widgets or just cranking the wheel every day the way that they did in the past. What's the element of creativity that leaders benefit from most? Is it the ability to strategize in ways that they haven't before? Is it thinking about ways that motivate the particular employees or people that they have working for them? What is it that they need to draw on the most when it comes to creativity to be successful leaders?
Well, Francis, I think I'd say both of those and many more. We'll try a couple of them.
Yes, is the answer there.
Strategizing is, of course, the big picture of the organization, where you want to take it from, say, today, your as-is model, to mm-hmm. tomorrow, which we frequently call the 2B model. Well, creativity comes out in so many different ways when you're talking about strategy. Envisioning the future. Envisioning a path to get you to the future,
mm-hmm.
How you frame the whole picture of the future, whether you frame it as, take our current economic situation 5 years out, are we going to be stronger, are we going to be weaker, will we have gone through several of these cycles in the next 5 years? All of these are issues of framing the big picture. Once you've decided those sorts of things, i.e. decided what the scenarios would be, the possible scenarios for the next 5 years, then you've got to figure out a way to get there, or a robust strategy, if you will, for handling any of those possible scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all of that is a highly creative thought process. It's more commonly referred to as strategic thinking, but if one is not creative and innovative in their thought, they're probably not going to be a particularly good strategic thinker.
And yet creativity is another one of these elements, like leadership itself,
right,
that some people believe you either have it or you don't, and you can't necessarily learn how to be creative.
Exactly. Again, I'll have students come in and wonder why this is on the syllabus.
Mm-hmm.
20, 30 years ago, people didn't even study creativity. It just was sort of that mysterious thing over there that belonged to the Van Goghs and the Mozarts of the world. But in today's world, again, we believe that people come in with a certain quotient,
mm-hmm.
some more than others, but that quotient can be improved and can be strengthened,
mm-hmm.
if the motivation is there to do so.
Yeah. Do you think people are more creative than they give themselves credit for? I think a lot of people kind of throw their hands up in the air and say, well, that's not really my thing. I'm not really is it left brain thinkers, the people who are the more creative and artistic type people?
No, those are the guys, the right brainers.
I always mix those up.
Everybody does, because they're associated with the opposite side of your body.
Right.
You
okay.
know, so
yeah.
The right brain is controlled by this left side of your body.
That's right. That's
very
right.
Frustrating.
Are people, though, do you think, not as easy on themselves as they should be, that and they maybe are a little more creative than they give themselves credit for?
Oh, I definitely believe that. I think it's just been repressed or suppressed, if
mm-hmm.
you will.
Yep.
Hate to point a finger anger at our school systems, but I'm not saying anything that a lot of other people haven't said, which is, you know, all you have to do is look at youngsters and your own children to see the innate creativity that most of us are born with.
Mm-hmm.
And then many of our structured systems, and of course that includes education, like us to, you know, stay in our swim lane and, you know, do what we're asked to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we learn not to step out of that swim lane too often.
Yeah.
So it's almost a relearning again that has to occur.
Now, one of the challenges for people who are kind of coming to terms with their creativity is navigating these organizations, as you talked about earlier,
mm-hmm.
that are more and more becoming, the lines between them, the boundaries between them,
yes.
are becoming tremendously blurred and in some cases obliterated,
mm-hmm.
not only by technology, but just by the changing nature of the missions that
right.
organizations like agencies
right.
are trying to meet.
Yes.
That applying that creativity then to being able to navigate this this new type of organization strikes me as another challenge on top of the challenge.
Yes, definitely. Learning how to navigate, as you say, organizations in ways that are non-traditional also requires creativity. As we were talking at break, you know, many of us today have to lead across organizations. We have to work with people effectively over whom we have no command and control, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
They're on a totally different organizational chart,
maybe yep.
a different organization. Like I said, we work in teams, and we work in these network shapes. Networks and teams, very similar. Networks we tend to think of as more permanent. You know, teams might be a 3 or a 6 month project.
Mm-hmm.
But take classic examples of Homeland Security or any disaster relief. When that occurs in our country, multiple organizations come together. For example, we say the next earthquake, not looking forward to one, but when one occurs, mm-hmm. we've got NORTHCOM involved, we've got FEMA, we've got the federal government, we've got local responders, we've got state level. These are networks of organizations. And we're increasingly realizing that to handle national and international problems, that networks are the structure that is most effective
mm-hmm.
and most adaptable. The quickest to respond, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So that same model holds within organizations, whether it's the Department of Defense or whether it's the Department of Commerce. Creativity is one of your great challenges as a leader to work in those kinds of environments is to recognize new and non-traditional ways of leading your folks, motivating your folks. Again, knowing that many of these folks you have no command and control over. They're not in your organizational charge.
Mm-hmm. The role of a leader woven into a network like that is another aspect that it seems to me is dramatically different than what the role of a leader was in the past, and I want to explore that a little bit when we continue with Dr. Jerry Gingrich of the National Defense University on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue in a moment.
I remember that morning, I woke up with simple flu-like symptoms. As the day progressed, my temperature reached 106 degrees, so my parents rushed me to the ER.
When Leslie Meigs was a child, she was diagnosed with meningococcal meningitis.
That's when they brought my parents in, and I told them the reality of the situation, that I was dying, and that I probably wouldn't make it.
Without a vaccination to prevent it, Leslie's type of meningitis, although rare, can lead to serious complications and death within 48 hours.
I was in a coma for weeks, in the hospital for months, and had to go on dialysis. All of this, and I'm considered lucky.
Novartis is developing new and innovative vaccines to help protect against meningitis, influenza, and other infectious diseases.
I believe that people don't need to suffer from diseases like this. And with all the new vaccines that are being developed today, hopefully, they won't have to.
Novartis. Think what's possible.
Make your dollar go further at Nationals Park as the Nats battle the Cincinnati Reds Friday, June 4th to Sunday the 6th. Pre-game party Friday and Saturday at the Miller Lite Scoreboard Walk with $5 Miller products. Sunday, Family Fun Day. Pre-game autographs, post-game, kids run the bases. And the first 10,000 kids, 12 and under, receive a free batting helmet presented by Smithfield. Spend less, get more, go Nats. Visit Nationals.com or call 888-632-NATS.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Matt Coos, the Director of Federal Network Security at the Homeland Security Department, Patch Management. What's the deal? Why is it so hard?
You're looking at pretty large numbers of assets, and I don't think a lot of folks have a good grasp on what they have, for one. You got a lot of different, you know, OS types and applications out there, so you've got to keep track of a lot of different patch releases, and you've got the testing cycles, which may or may not be very mature in different organizations, and that can take some time. But that's really why the automation piece is so key.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/DoraBeckInsider.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thanks for listening to the program today. My guest is Dr. Jerry Gingrich of the National Defense University, and we're talking about learning how to be a leader and the tools that you can leverage to become a better leader at your agency and among your team. We were talking about creativity and the idea of working in a network and how important that is in leadership now. And the example that you used of a disaster response, if you're the head of a federal disaster or the federal part of a disaster response and you go into an area and you say, okay, we're here and we're ready to run this operation. You may not know the geography. You may not know the cultural needs of a particular area, whatever. And when you're working in that team, to come in with the kind of the old model of our leader is here and he's going to run things and he's very charismatic and on and on. That's really the exact opposite of what you're telling me is effective now and what the other leaders that you're going to be working with in your network are going to be expecting from you. Is that right?
Yes, I agree completely. The old model of your charismatic leader who walks in on rides in on the horse and says, I'm in control. Listen to me. That model's dead.
Yeah.
And hopefully we are replacing it with the newer one, which is a person who knows how to work in networks by working with people effectively over whom they have no control, mm-hmm. over whom they cannot reinforce. So, for example, in all of our organizations, we recognize that one of the greatest motivating forces is always what we call the incentive system or the reward system. Your boss can increase your pay. They can give you a larger office. They can give you attaboys. They can recognize you, et cetera, et cetera. That's your incentive system.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when one is working in a network, especially across other organizations, you have none of those incentives and rewards available to you. None.
Mm-hmm. And
except
you also,
maybe public recognition.
Yeah, and you also don't have the negative motivation, which is if you don't do what I want you to do, I can blow you out.
That's right. That's right. So you're working, let's say, with the head of the local police force.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They have their own reward system completely set up. Your ways of working with that person are much more demand skills such as negotiation, communication, facilitation, understanding the culture of the people and the organization you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
You have to come to the situation as a meeting of equals. You may be the head of FEMA and consider yourself more important. After all, you're the Fed. But for that police chief, he or she is the most important.
Mm-hmm.
And
he feels that way mainly because he or she's going to be there after you're gone and have to deal with whatever the residual effects are.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Respect, communication, understanding cultures, understanding your partners. You have to look at them as a partner. You have to understand issues like collaboration and information sharing.
Mm-hmm.
You can't hold it all to yourself. As we know, many of our organizations in the federal government are trained that information is to be kept close to the chest. So, again, this is a significant change in the way we think about leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to hold the information close to my chest, I'm going to share it with this person.
Mm-hmm.
So collaboration and communication are critical to working in networks effectively. So there are many different skills. We cover a lot of them in this course. We cover as many as we can in this course because our goal is to get the students to understand that increasingly in today's world, they work with people over whom they do not have command and control.
The good news is, though, we talked at the beginning about the concept of leadership and can you learn it or not. The good news is when we get to this level, these skills that you're talking about, I don't think there's any disagreement about the fact that anybody can at least learn to improve negotiation skills and collaboration skills and, and communication skills. Mm-hmm. Anybody can get better at those things.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And as you know, we've sort of put the course in three different modules, and this is sort of the last module, which is these abilities and skills that we feel are necessary for the 21st century leader, or the information age leader, as opposed to the more challenging ones, such as learning creativity, learning to think out of the box, those sorts of things.
All right. One of those things that's in that third module is the team process and the concept of team, and that's what I want to talk about to wrap up when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Dr. Jerry Gingrich of the National Defense University, my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose. We'll wrap up in a moment.
FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com explores the hard issues surrounding cloud computing from the government's perspective, sharing with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter, sponsored by Intel and Cisco. Two technology companies leading the cloud revolution.
If you want to enjoy the best Greece has to offer, you just can't miss the St. Catherine's Annual Greek Festival this weekend in Falls Church, Virginia. Come out and enjoy the best homemade Greek foods in the area, like lamb, Athenian chicken, calamari, Greek salads, and don't forget the wonderful Greek desserts like baklava. You must taste this homemade sweet this weekend in Falls Church, Virginia at St. Catherine's Annual Spring Festival. Call 703-671-1515, 703-671-1515.
Save money at HalfPriceDC.com with half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more. This week, HalfPriceDC.com has half-price gift certificates to Manny and Olga's, irresistible pizza, subs, gyros, and more with locations in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Place an order at a location near you today. And Old Dominion Speedway, Washington, D.C.'s only metropolitan place for racing action with drag racing on Fridays and NASCAR racing on Saturdays. See all the offers at HalfPriceDC.com.
There is a watchmaking standard that is revered around the world. That standard comes from Rolex. From clasp to bracelet to its unique watertight oyster case, a Rolex holds its value because it was intended to. Crafted from just three precious metals, platinum, steel, and gold, each defies the ordinary. Its steel, 904L, virtually indestructible and corrosion resistant, is incomparable. Its patented Everrose Gold, created in an exclusive foundry, will remain beautiful for life. Inside, a genuine Rolex movement is a product of superiority and remarkable testing. It is unrivaled. At Rolex, flawless standards create more than a watch. They create a value that was meant to endure. For a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center in Pentagon City, Arlington.
Join Input, the authority on government business, June 24th at the Fairview Park Marriott for an executive breakfast featuring David McClure, Associate Administrator, Office of Citizen Services and Communications for the GSA. McClure will highlight new technology opportunities for GSA and ways to improve cloud computing standards and initiatives. Denise Peterson, Manager, Industry Analysis for Input, will also discuss the GSA topic as well as government-wide cloud computing trends. To register, contact Input Events at 703-707-3600.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and you can learn how to be a better leader. That's the good news. Dr. Jerry Gingrich, professor of the Information Resources Management College at the National Defense University, is talking about this with me on In Depth today. And we talked before the break about this this third module in your class, and one of the concepts included there is the idea of working in a team environment. And I'm going to use my son's soccer team as an example, okay? My son's team has a coach. And using the previous leadership model that we've been talking about, the closest analogy would be the leader in the organization would be that coach. And he essentially tells the players what to do. Mm-hmm. He tells them what position they're going to play. He tells them what plays they should use in certain situations. And he really decides, and then what the organization is going to do. And then it's the workers or the players' responsibility to go out and execute mm-hmm. what the coach involves. It seems to me that the team concept that you're talking about and that I'm seeing in leadership structures across the federal government is more along the lines of somebody being the captain of the team, where it's actually one of the players who demonstrates an ability to get his or her teammates to do better than they normally would do on their own and whatever, where there's more of a first among peers mm-hmm, environment mm-hmm. than somebody who's the boss and they're going to tell everybody what to do and then they're all going to go out and do it.
Yes.
That has been hard for leaders in government to get.
Yes.
That I'm going to be more responsible for what my organization does, but I might not necessarily be recognized more when they're successful.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is the key to getting people to understand that their organizations are going to perform better when they apply that first among peers model than when they apply the iron fist in the velvet glove model of here's what we're going to do, and now you go do what I told you you're going to do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Getting that buy-in, I guess.
Yes, getting that buy-in. Well, like many things, I would say the top leadership of the organization has to walk the talk.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult for mid-level managers to change behavior when they see senior leaders using old models of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely buy-in at the top and then actually performing your work life with that new model is very important. In general, the federal government, as we know, has been a very highly structured organization. And in many cases, we've gotten fairly rigid. Leadership, as we've been talking about, needs to break down those boundaries and work through networks and work through teams. And then reward team behavior. And so it brings us back to the incentive system again, mm-hmm. which outside of leadership, I think, is your most powerful factor in an organization for shaping behavior. So reward systems have to be set up, designed, which is not really that tough to do, such that you reward team behavior
mm-hmm.
as opposed to individual, I'm in control behavior.
Uh-huh.
People that work in teams sometimes have what we call formal leaders and sometimes what we call informal leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about first among peers, it's very similar to talking about emergent leadership. What that means is you put a group of people together in a team and there's really not an appointed leader, but someone rises to the top.
Uh-huh.
They emerge and the group respects them. To a certain extent, you can't control that by its very definition.
Mm-hmm.
It's an emergent process. So the things that an organization's top leadership can control are those reward systems and incentive systems and their own behavior, and then setting up the structure of the organization such that teams are part of the structure, part of the system. And so, in other words, they've created an top leadership has created an environment
mm-hmm.
where teams are created and can be successful,
mm-hmm.
can be high-performing teams, and then letting that leadership emerge, and then rewarding that emergent leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess those would be my key components.
Okay. One last concept I want to talk about because we're almost out of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the idea, we've talked a lot about the fluidity of organizations now.
Yes.
And the leadership skills that are required there, but that's juxtaposed against what you just cited, which is in government, a lot of times these organizations are not as fluid and rigid, or not as fluid as they should be. They are more rigid.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who takes your course and learns all of these skills and then goes back and finds him or herself in a real rigid organization after you've trained them to be a creative free thinker,
yes,
might chomp at the bit a little bit, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do. We always say there's a name for that, something like re-immersion.
Mm-hmm.
How you take the skills back and actually implement them. And sometimes it's a shock to students. We have a four-month program at the university, and their re-immersion is even more difficult than the five-day students,
mm-hmm,
if you will. Part of the way I try to prepare them, for example, in my five-day course, is by having them apply the course concepts to their own organization, i.e., what can you realistically do, mm-hmm, when you get back? Sometimes I simply frame it as, what's your 3-minute elevator speech for your boss?
Right.
The boss says, I let you go for a week. Now, what can you help me with?
Yeah.
The outcomes of the courses and the work is to get them to apply these concepts so that they can be prepared to go back without too much of a shock.